CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com, Friday morning. It's the 3rd of December. Good December. All right. So, by the way, Bulela, we always get questions about this. Your song for your MKT show ad that we just played now. Who does that?
A friend of mine. Yeah. I asked him to put it together for the show. So I sent his commission. Yeah. Specifically for the show. Yeah. He's a cool rapper.
Some people thought
Pat
it was
Faded,
you.
His name.
What's his name?
Pat Faded. Pat Faded. You can catch him. Patrick Wells, but his rapping name is Pat Faded.
Okay. Very nice.
On the socials.
Very nice.
No, it is not me.
People thought it was
I'm
you.
I'm not the rap guy.
Oh, yes. They thought you were rapper.
I'm a Joburg. No, and there's nothing that's so off-putting. So a guy I went to school with is like one of the biggest rappers in the country right now. And it's quite hilarious because we kind of know him from back in school. But there's nothing more weird to me than when you've got to put the character on, you know? Like imagine me, I'm just like a northern suburbs. I used to play cricket. One of my favorite things in the world is sitting at test cricket. I must come out and pretend to be a street thug now.
Yeah, yeah, but that's what... you know what I mean? That's Drake's whole thing too. He's like Canadian, first of all, which are the most... Yeah. Milquetoast people on earth. Jesus, a friend of mine in Vancouver sent me a screenshot of the weather over there at the moment. This is just unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
It is so rainy. Let me just find this for you quickly. This is the November rainfall total for Vancouver Airport, 312 millimeters. University of Victoria, 286. White Rock, 433 millimeters. And there's a place called Hope, which is also in British Columbia. It's nearby, near to Vancouver. 730 millimeters. You realize how much water that is?
The Canadian weather, no thank you.
Not for
no,
me.
No, thank you.
Anyway, so...
Beautiful country, but the weather...
So Drake is also one of those guys. He's like, he raps and he seems like he's this hardcore dude, but actually he like grew up in this middle-class family in like the suburbs.
Also half-Jewish, interestingly.
And half-Jewish, exactly. I think Jenna's mom...
He's got from Degrassi, for
I think Jenna's mom, Ilana, is actually his aunt.
His bubby or what's
no.
His bubby grandma.
No, so Bubba is the grandfather and Zayda is the grandfather, Bubba's the grandmother.
Oh.
Those are the only two I know about. I don't know any of the others. All right. Vancouver is currently cut off from the rest of Canada by road. You see, that's because of the rain. They're having so much rain there at the moment. It's insane. If you ever watched those horrible Twilight movies, I think they filmed them mostly in like Oregon and Washington State, which are like on the border with Canada on the Pacific Northwest. Vancouver is even more rainy and cloudy than in those movies. And I think they specifically chose that part of the world because the vampires in the movies don't like the sun. Something like that. And I remember watching them thinking, for God's sake, can we just have a little bit of sun? You know? If you ever watched the movie Seven with Brad Pitt in it, one of the most disturbing movies ever.
Yeah.
One of the things that makes it so disturbing is for the entire duration of the movie, you don't ever see the sun. And it shows you how if your whole world for that 2 hours that you're watching the movie is this dull place without natural light, it actually affects the whole mood of the movie. It's incredible. So that's part of the reason I don't think I could live in that part of the world. Not a chance. 700 liters per square meter is what 700 mils is. That's exactly right.
Jeez.
It's amazing. It's a huge
amount of water. Wow, that's a lot.
It's like, I mean, I don't know how much is in a bath, but a bath might be, 100 liters maybe at max. So it's 7 baths per square meter. Know. That's a lot of water.
Do people still bath?
I don't know. I don't.
It's not 1812. No.
So apparently 1812. Here, Jared says, quite right, they filmed Twilight in Forks, Washington, which is the rainiest city on Earth. Yeah, I read that somewhere. That's how I know that. I'm not some fan of Twilight, I can assure you. Jesus, I can't believe I actually.
Let's just get that straight.
Yeah, yeah. I sat through that first one because it was also we were talking about music earlier and trying to keep up with whatever's going on and whatever people are doing.
Mm.
I remember I paid attention to that Twilight thing because everyone was talking about it. It was all that anyone was talking about. So I felt like I needed to know what was going on, and I watched the first one and I just gave up. And the other thing I couldn't get into was the 50 Shades of Grey books, which every woman in the world was reading at a certain time. And I was just like, no, thank you. Can't do this.
I've watched so many movies like that kind of stuff. I haven't seen Twilight, but whenever guys tell me they've seen these kinds of movies and I see the look on their face, I was like, how attractive was she? Because I've watched so many movies where it was just, okay, she likes it. I got to get through this.
No.
See if I can see her again. She's beautiful. She's way out of my league.
Yeah, guys will put up with a lot to make the girl whoever they're interested in happy. All right. Well, Leanne, when do you put up your Christmas decorations? Because mine are going up this weekend. It's happening.
I haven't put up Christmas decorations in my own home ever.
Mm.
It's always for me been my parents' home. That kind of thing.
Yeah, so you're not going to do any at your house? Because I know Mbolelo isn't. That's why I didn't even bother asking him.
No, I never do.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's weird.
How will you have the Christmas... will you have that Christmas spirit? How will you have that whole end of the year excitement that the flashing little lights
of
the Christmas tree?
No one comes to my house. It's just me here.
So what? Do it for you. What the hell, man?
I don't know. It's just like... I know that it'll be at my parents' house. There'll be a lovely big tree, the Noel signs all over, glass baubles.
I'm disappointed in you. I really am. I'm disappointed.
Maybe I should try.
I'm disappointed in both of you, frankly. You're not even trying.
You've got to manage your own expectations.
It's not a bar humbug thing. It's just,
I've
never thought of doing it myself.
I'm putting up two trees. I'm putting up one in the... I'm putting one up downstairs, which is the main tree, and then I'm going to put a little one here in the study so that when we do the show in the mornings, if you guys aren't going to be festive, at least I will be, and it'll be in the background. I'm going to change the arrangement of this room so that I can have the tree in the background. It'll make it much more fun, and people can at least feel like somebody on the show has got some fucking Christmas spirit.
There is a specific date you're supposed to do it. I just can't remember what it is.
It's meant to be the 12th. It's meant to be 12 days of Christmas. So you put it up 12 days before and you're meant to take it down 12 days after. But most people take them down a lot sooner than 12 days after because by then you're all Christmased out, you know. But that's what Advent is, I think. You know the Advent calendars?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think
I used to ask for an Advent calendar. Because I had one when I was really young, and in those days they made them beautifully with the little cardboard bendy doors. Mm-hmm. Everything was covered in glitter.
Yes.
Each one had a proper gift inside, not just the ones that they make now where it's a piece of chocolate in a mold. And I remember saying to my mom, I was in my 30s, and I said to her, Mom, you know that I only ever had one Advent calendar. And it was something that I looked forward to every year, and you never bought me them again. And since then, every year, from my late 30s until now, she buys me an Advent calendar.
So what a way to guilt your mom. You made me feel so sorry for your mother.
No, me too.
Like, oh my gosh.
Even now, in her wheelchair, she sends somebody to buy me an Advent calendar.
Well,
oh my word.
I don't have an Advent calendar up because, I mean, it would just be me opening it, and I'm not going to eat 24 chocolates. But my little nephews have one at their house. Obviously, their parents are going up. But then my parents have also put one up. So whichever kid opens the door at their house, the other one gets to open it at the grandparents' house. So they're going to end up with so many chocolates in them. Unbelievable. Anyway. So Annette says, my tree and my fairy lights are already up. Uncle Potse says, also putting up a Christmas tree. House Christmas decorations are taken to another level in the US. Over the top, but awesome. Yeah, I love that. And Therence says, the Christmas tree conversation sounds like deja vu. It was discussed on Monday. I'm sorry it's boring for you. I'm excited about this. I'm not going to.
You are on.
I'm so excited about that. I love Christmas, man. Justin says, we put up our Christmas tree on the 16th of December and take it down on New Year's Day. Yeah. Melissa says, Gareth, you don't see Mbulelo getting upset with you because you don't want to run 100 kilometers. Fair enough. Fair enough.
No, but listen, you know, I didn't want it to go there, but you are. I don't know if it's just weird to me. You are weirdly into it, but it is a good thing because so the one part I've told you I love, I'm just looking forward to spending time with the people I love. That's the only thing I like about it.
Mm.
Like, spare me the rest.
Yeah.
I just love spending time where everyone's off. Let's have a go at each other. You know?
I hope
come on, see you tomorrow.
I hope these assholes in government aren't going to try and lock us down again. I mean, don't. They can forget it, right? People aren't going to follow any rules.
Forget it.
So from what I'm seeing in the news at the moment, this Omicron or whatever it is variant, whatever it is, this thing is much more transmissible but much less dangerous. So
yeah, mild symptoms.
And I see lots of countries are being pressured to open up travel for South Africans again because Cyril's gone on a rampage. He's like, you guys can't cut us out just because we discovered this thing. Don't punish us, blah, blah, blah. So I hope he sticks to that.
It's in more Northern Hemisphere countries than it is in Southern Hemisphere countries.
I know. There was a Stephen Colbert clip that was doing the rounds where he said exactly that.
Yes,
but
saw that.
But, you know, I get nervous because he's apparently talking to us again on Sunday. And that just...
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not going to preempt the whole thing.
If he's standing up, you got problems. Hmm. If he's sitting down, don't worry about it. Then it's just the little...
Good point.
You know, he wants to show you his new iPad cover.
So Tracy says, this year I got myself an advent calendar with coffee pods. That's cool. A different brew every day. My son once had a Lego advent calendar. That was the coolest one I've ever seen.
Oh, that's cool.
That's fantastic.
That's very cool.
All right. We're going to turn our attention now to somebody who is no stranger to the show. He has been, he's been very busy since we last had him on the show. And in case you don't know, Rich is the co-founder of global presentation powerhouses Missing Link and TalkDraw. He is renowned as a speaker and has presented his thoughts and ideas in many countries, including, Canada, Puerto Rico, UK, USA, Germany, Kenya, Pakistan. He's also the author of a book called Legicide and Boredom Slayer. And his new book is called Here Be Dragons. And here he is, the dragon himself. Hello, Rich Mulholland. How are you?
Hello, team. How's everybody?
Good, man. How are you? First of all,
fantastic. Thank you.
Nice to see you again.
This is shit.
We've seen more of your... We've seen more of your wife than we've seen of you this year.
It's very, very fun at house because I'm trying to sleep and you guys are making her be loud. Now, my wife is loud at the best of times, but now you are saying things to her and she's high pitched. So only you guys and like cats can hear her, but she somehow reverberates to my bones at like whatever god awful time you've got her on the show. But it's been very entertaining. The other day I was at a speaking gig and a lady walked up to me after the gig, and you know, it's you kind of get used to these things, and she came up to me and said to me, I listened to your wife on Cliff Central. And I thought, that's pretty rad. That is absolutely the coolest thing ever. So thank you so much for that.
So listen, tell us about this new book of yours. What did you do this for? I mean, most people, a book is hard work. I know you've written a couple of other ones as well, but a book is hard work. It's something that goes, it's a record. It gets kept. Whereas you do a show like we do in the morning, most people forget what we talked about yesterday. Why did you decide to write another book?
To make lots of money. Okay, now let me actually caveat this with so this is not going to make lots of money.
No,
but the idea isn't this. Okay, so here's the thing: books sell talks. Talks sell work down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I could give you, if you wanted to, you know, I believe strongly in the connection with the importance of, and I do, I believe very, very strongly with the ideas in the book, but ultimately you do something to get your ideas out into the world.
Right.
And then the hope is that the world wants to come back and get more of your ideas. So the book is an entry point. You want to get to the point where it's making people have more questions and think, hey, I need a bit of a guide to take this further.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's what our business helps with. So the book was there to introduce and to connect a problem in the world with us. And then once those two things exist, if people now think, well, this problem feels like one too big for me to go alone, maybe we should engage with that company. Now, I hope that many, many people will have enough in the book in order to solve the problem for themselves. But I kind of hope that you won't. I hope that you'll need to come in.
Yeah, but I mean, this is the problem, right? You put all your secrets in here and then people aren't going to come to your business for help anymore because they're going to go, we bought Rich's book. We don't need him. We've got everything in here. He's given us the manuscript.
So, yes, but the bottom line is that people are one of two things. They're lazy or busy. And it's usually busy. People are busy, too busy doing their job to do what you're now telling them that you want them to do. So they need help. Especially true if you work in a large corporation, it's very, very easy to hire other people because you're not spending money, you're spending budget. And budget's a very, very different thing. So if people can then come and engage with you and say, okay, cool, well, we got a bit of budget and what we don't have is time. But we do have budget. Maybe you guys can come in and help us. But like, I'm being a bit facetious. I wrote the book because I strongly believe in the ideas. It actually started off as a talk. I'd written a talk for a Think Sales conference. Mm-hmm. I liked the idea, so I formed it into a little ebook. So I couldn't get all my ideas across in this talk. That ebook was like 20 odd pages, and it did really, really well, and it drove a lot of business towards our business. And I thought, no man, I even the ebook, I didn't have time to put what I really wanted into it, so I expanded it into the whole book.
So listen, the last time we had you on, and we'll come back to the book in a second, but the last time we had you on, you told us how important it is, and this was at the beginning of lockdown last year. That's how long ago we last saw you on the show. Mm-hmm. You were telling us how important it is to like set up some kind of way of doing home meetings and conferences and stuff, like where you have to actually make your background nice and you have to have a good microphone and all of this shit. Now, I see a very impressive background there. Are you in a studio or something, or is this just in your house? Oh, look at that.
It's my own studio. Yeah.
How did you do that?
And it's cool as well because I can also be a potato. Hey! What's going on?
For people who are listening and aren't watching, so Rich has got this really cool background with a whole bunch of skateboards on it and all the rest of it. And then he switched cameras and then he turned himself into a little animated potato. So that's pretty cool.
And it could be worse. It's like, I figured out if this isn't going well, I can also become Jasmine.
Hi. Oh, wow. That is amazing.
Oh, that's wild. He just turned into a woman. That's amazing. What do you use for that?
Okay, but you can do now. You can do now. It's totally okay.
What did you do with that? I mean, how does that work?
Is that too much?
No, it's fine.
So there's a little app called Snap Camera.
Oh, yeah?
And it's super easy. I think it's made by Snapchat or whatever. And Snap, it's so easy and it's free. No. And so there's a bunch of filters. And obviously this can be stupid if you use it too much. But I found like some interesting applications for it. So if our customers haven't paid us on time and my account person says to me, listen, this person hasn't paid us for a while. It's a bit of a problem. It's getting a bit silly. So I'll send them a video and be like, hey, guys, you know, I know the project went well. So thank you so much for engaging with us. But if you wouldn't mind at all, please, could you pay the bill?
and he turns into a demon. That's hilarious. That's very good.
And the idea is to try and have a little bit of fun with things, but to do it subtly. Now, today I'm just kind of all over the place with this, but presentation, there may be one or two cues where I want to use it or things. And then, that will go into other tools I have like Prezi. So if I wanted to, I could also bring up content and things like that.
That's fantastic.
Easily, so. Yeah, it's a great – you know what the very nice cool thing about presenting online now, about the world we live in, is that you stop being just the presenter, and you're also the stage manager. If you want to change your lighting, you want to do things and get different looks and stuff. Right. And so it's given us room to play in a way that we didn't have before. And so that's been fun. So it's allowed me to think – I don't want to – like it's a 4D presenting experience now, which is pretty rad.
I think that's amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and people have to start thinking creatively. I mean, there's nothing worse than those cameras that shine up into someone's chin and they've got a terrible microphone that's popping the whole time, or you hear this hiss in the background the whole day. It's just awful.
Let's not forget the judge who turned himself into a cat for the entire hearing.
That's right. He didn't know how to change it.
That is amazing.
So, Rich, I mean, what's...
It's one of my favorite hacks. Sorry. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite hacks, if you live with somebody who does Zoom calls, mm-hmm. if you go into at the bottom of their... So there's a bit that's called virtual light filters mm-hmm. in their camera settings.
Yeah.
Now, if you go to the very bottom of that setting on Zoom, mm-hmm. there's a thing that says studio effects. It's on the bottom right. Now, if you go to studio effects, it's where you can actually thicken your eyebrows or make a better mustache and things like this. So if you did want to actually add stuff. The best thing about it is, and it's so hard to find, there's a little setting there that says apply to all future meetings.
Oh my God.
So your job is to find the person in your house and give them a mustache for all their future meetings. They will have no idea how to turn off.
They will be like that
Judge Cat.
That's so great.
Yeah, because you have to literally go into a setting, into a setting, into a setting, and then check a box. Beautiful.
But it is amazing how when you watch people doing this stuff, and I'm sure you've seen this too in presentations, there are some people who are so vain and so self-absorbed that they're pretty much looking at their own picture the whole time. You know what I mean?
Right. So there's two ways around that. The one way, you can't do it in StreamYard, but in a tool like Zoom, I often find if I'm having a one-on-one meeting, I go to hide self view, and it makes it easier to engage people. Yeah. The other is to use, so right now I'm looking through a teleprompter. So right. I don't actually use a teleprompter for teleprompting, but I use it so that I can stare directly at the camera, directly at you guys. Mm-hmm. But I would normally be looking directly at you guys,
right.
And it doesn't look like I'm looking in the wrong place. Another fantastic tool, if you want to try and get that without the expense of a teleprompter, I highly, highly recommend PlexiCam.
What is that? The PlexiCam.
We're getting a small little tool like this.
Okay.
Okay. And so if you imagine there's a yoke here, now this goes over your screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is your camera can now move up and down and across on this clear setting. I know, sorry, this is really, really terrible audio for those watching, for listening. But so then you're essentially, your camera would be here and it would be sitting on this device
right.
on the middle of your screen instead of sitting here. At the top of your screen. So you can maintain perfect eye contact with people without... And listen, my book is about selling with a story. You cannot be convincing if you've got all your... If you're not setting the basic standards correctly, if people walk up and they look at you and you've not set things up, you're looking down their nose, you've not made an effort, your ethos is all wrong. So they may like your logos may be good, your information, your pathos, how you connect to them emotionally may be good, but they don't really trust you as a source. That's problematic. Like, you got to sort that shit out.
Absolutely.
It's so true. There are people that I work with and I can't connect with them because they've got some camera coming up their chin and they're looking way up and you feel like you're not being listened to when you speak to them. There's no connection.
Yeah, it's terrible. A good standard rule of thumb for me is the top knot. Now, bear in mind, so if you go to negotiation school, the first thing they're going to teach you, and it's so cheesy, but unfortunately this kind of thing works, is, you know, you bring in the person and you sit on the higher chair. You put them on the lower chair, right?
Yes.
So that they're kind of sitting down and you're looking down at them. One of the things that everybody says to me, so I'm like, I don't know, 5'8" or something, 5'7", 5'8". I'm not a tall person. I'm like medium height. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that a lot of people say to me when they now meet me in person for the first time is, oh, you're shorter than I expected. And the reason is because I fill the screen properly. So I'm at regular tall person height. And the rule is to top knot. Take your fist, put it above your head and make sure, I mean, you guys are all spaced very well, that's roughly the good height for you to be. Okay. I also have a desk that can move. So if I do want to, you know, go, ladies and gentlemen, there was a man who can do things and you can get it set to the height you need to get it to. But a lot of people are sitting down here. Now, if you're sitting down here, just think about how you're positioning yourself in the room. So getting these basics right. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't know if you feel this, but I get into meetings now. If somebody looks like shit, 18 months into this thing, 20 months into this thing, I'm sorry, you're just not making an effort.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm in my fifth, sixth iteration, yeah, and I'm already planning other things. Just, you know, invest a tiny bit.
And these days, this is your office. I mean, think about what the rent for office space would have been before. Or if you're working at the place and you're not paying the rent, the petrol costs that you would have had to pay to go in and out of the office. So if you are working from home, put some goddamned effort in.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a stupid thing, and I know you won't believe this because I look bloody terrible, but I put powder on my face.
Do you?
Every morning before I get onto a Zoom call. And people will say, no, but this is ridiculous. But here's the thing, guys, like if you were going into a video studio and people, I've got a big effing light right in front of me here, a key light. If you were going into a video studio where you have a high-end camera and a big bloody light on your face, somebody comes up to you before and they dab makeup on you. Why is it they're not doing this because you're on TV? They're doing this because you're on camera. And the camera and the lighting and your face and oils and things work together and will make you shine.
Yeah.
So this is not being this metro guy that's trying to do things. It's just trying to actually show up as the best version of yourself.
And
if you don't want to do that,
If it works for people who are doing professional television shows, then it'll work for you. Makes sense.
Right. You need your edge. You need to have your unfair advantage, your small little thing. You want to, there's that joke about the plane crashes in the jungle and the two dudes and the ones putting on their Nikes when they hear the lion roar and it says, you know, you're not going to outrun the lion. It says, no, I only have to outrun you. That's it. You just have to outrun the other people on the call. So if you can do a small little thing to be slightly better than the other humans and you can look slightly more professional than the other people pitching to that company, then all of these cues are like, these guys are professional.
And how is
that? Why not give yourself that unfair advantage?
I mean, how's that any different to pitching up for a meeting and looking like you've dressed properly as opposed to, and we're not trying to impress each other. We're just trying to look professional. And the person who pitches up in their dressing gown and slippers, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you've got to, so, and again, I absolutely don't want this to be a sales pitch for the book, but this is the stuff that I'm going through my head.
Yeah.
You're trying to sell.
And you cover this.
The difference between storytelling and story selling.
You do talk about a lot of this in the book. So, I mean, this is all relevant. What we would have talked to you about anyway, if you just asked us, you know?
In my mind, what we're trying to do is we're trying to sell the humans another story in which we play a more important part.
Right.
So I'm trying to get to my customer, and right now I'm just, you know, guy on Zoom call. That's that in their movie, that's my job. That's who I was. My job is not to become the hero of their story, but to audition for a better part. So I have to position myself and sell them a story in which they need me. And in order to sell that story, I've got to get all those little cues correct. It's not just about what you say. I mentioned earlier about the logos, pathos, and ethos, but call it your head, your heart, and your gut. Okay? If they can logically want to deal with you, but they, and you care about the topic, but you don't like the person, then that's a problem.
Yeah. Right?
That's basically every political discussion you have. You know, people present evidence about a topic you care about, but you don't like them, so their evidence is shit.
Right.
So you've got to check all three of these boxes. Most people just turn around and they check the first box. Oh, I'm just going to give them logic and spew out facts. You're not going to persuade anyone to do anything with that. You've got to check all the boxes.
So I quote here from your book, if Aristotle's modes of persuasion, which are logos, that's the head, pathos, that's the heart, and ethos, that's the gut, let us understand the appeals that we need to make in the mind of our audience, then what you've put together here is the action framework gives you a structure. And you said there are four things. I mean, this is just an example of what you cover in the book. You say, number one, give them a reason to care. Number two, give them a reason to believe. Number three, tell them what they need to know. And number four, tell them what they need to do. I mean, if this is pretty advanced stuff for some people who just go into a meeting without any idea of what's likely to be achieved. They're kind of just ticking it off. It's in their diary. It's just something they have to do. That's why a lot of people just don't achieve a damn thing in their lives, right? They just never get anything done after a meeting either.
The problem with a lot of people is that they're on the okay plateau. So think about typing, right? When you started typing, you couldn't type at all. You couldn't type for shit. Then you learned to type a little bit. And that beginning curve was difficult. So you're sitting there and you're learning. You're trying to figure out where the Q and the W. And eventually you're like, hey, I'm okay at this. And you're typing away and you're on the okay plateau. So you've now entered good enough. And for many people, good enough is But if you want to achieve any type of mastery, good enough isn't. This is where Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours are misunderstood, right? If you carry, I've done 10,000 hours of typing since I entered the OK Plateau, but I've not got any better. I'm not improving. I'm still the shit hunt and peck typist.
Right.
The only way to get better at something is to decide to go to mastery. So what we've done is we've taken everybody who, yes, you're good enough to show up, and yes, you're good enough to do a basic presentation, and you understand how to do that. Because a lot of people are like, oh, I've done, you know, 1,000 presentations. Yes, and they're, you know, they're all crap. But, you know, what I want to do is say to you, how can we give you a couple of tools that can help get you to the next phase of mastery? And what I've tried to do is not to give you these super advanced tools, but to give you the next step up that mountain. So again, like what you said, give them a reason to care, give them a reason to believe, tell them what they need to know and tell them what they need to do. It may be a more advanced structure than you're using currently, because most people don't use a structure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even from those four sentences in order, you understand basically what I'm asking you to do. It's not complex.
Yeah.
It's just advanced.
No, I love it. I mean, listen, Rich, if we can just get everybody to make a little bit more of an effort with their presentations, with their meetings, with their general attitude to how to get things done in business, I'm all for it. That's why I love the idea of this book, and I would recommend it to anybody, no matter what business you're in. It's really, really helpful. It'll just help you to be less boring and more persuasive. I mean, if nothing else, right?
Yep. Well, that's my hope. It's all about using your eloquence to persuade people to do stuff for good. And well, I think that if we can get that right, if we can figure out how other humans think, other people think, and figure out what we can do to move them, then we win. And so do they. And because I do think that we should be going through life as a cooperative game.
And, you know, the importance of stories, you know, that's the whole, the crux of your book, really. Humans have told each other stories since the dawn of time. Those stories can sometimes turn into really important tools that we use every day in an economy or in society. And sometimes those stories are just useful so that we can amuse each other. But either way, we've got to be better at telling stories. And the people who are the best at telling the stories are the ones who make the most money, who have the happiest lives, who have the best relationships, who have the most sex, who have the most enjoyable holidays, because you can tell a good story about them. I mean, who isn't attracted to the idea of being around a great storyteller, someone like Billy Connolly or, you know, George Carlin or any of those great comedians, even the people who've written these amazing novels that all of us love so much. Those are the people who we regard the most highly. And if you can learn how to tell better stories, then you're on your way to all kinds of success. It's called Here Be Dragons with Rich Mulholland. It's really good to see you again, dude. What are your plans for December?
Thanks so much.
Are you doing anything fun? You're always traveling. What's up with you?
Yeah, we just came back from, I was on a US speaking tour and we were in Cancun, and nice. Now we're actually relaxing over Christmas. We were considering going to Glasgow for a couple of weeks, but we're actually doing that next year anyway. Mm-hmm. And that, so we were still busy contemplating that, and now that's obviously not happening. But we were, yeah.
Your accent chill. Definitely needs sharpening up. So
yeah.
I
yeah, totally, totally.
I'm glad to hear you.
You're making I go there for a week. I'm like, hello there, right? What's going on? I come back. How's it? How you guys? Stop it.
I know. It's so weird. And I mean, just listening, the last time you were on, it's weird. It was just audio and we were in a studio setting. But your accent has definitely become more South African during lockdown. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's strange because I've been here like 38 years. So I'm surprised that the last – it kind of really depends on how I feel, I think. If I'm like angry or passionate, I get very Scottish. And when I'm just like being myself, I'm like very Santon.
Listen, yeah. Has Jasmine pulled out all those Christmas decorations that she told us about earlier this year?
Dude. Do the Kennedys like bullets? Okay, so Jasmine pulled out those. Basically, she started trying to do it before my birthday. That's in October the 16th. I was like, no, listen, this has got to stop. Then she tried between my birthday and Halloween. I was like, no, you got a Halloween. So this year, she was like, I'm going to get my passion going. And she did Halloween, which now is a new thing. So now our whole house was Halloweened to hell. Like, it right. actually looked pretty badass, I'll be honest. Like, kids were coming past taking photos. So that was amazing.
Yeah.
But then, that one, there wasn't a ending gap in between. There was a crossfade. between Aloysius. That's where we went to. So slowly but surely, trees started appearing, and we had multiple trees. And one day I go outside, and Jazz says, just go fetch, just take a look, order. And it's another tree. We don't have a Christmas tree. We got a Christmas forest. Okay, I don't know what's going on. There's like people building tree houses in my living room.
Yeah.
No, please send us a photo. We'd love to see it.
So Michael says, this is a good point. Michael says, Rich's pick and appearance are the best of all the people this morning, which shows that he walks his talk. Someone to learn from in this day of screen appearances, things that we've never thought of. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. He also says, every new technology adjusts the requirements on our presentation and appearance. Today, you don't have to wear pants at all. Yeah, but I mean, at least make sure the top half is good, right?
I think so. Small little hack, just as a thought that I didn't mention earlier. If you don't want to spend a fortune on gear, because it can get quite expensive, almost everybody now has an old cell phone, and your last generation cell phone still has a way better camera than your webcam and your computer. If you go to Camo software, so just search for Camo webcam software, C-A-M-O. Yep. It turns your phone, Android or iOS, into a really, really powerful webcam.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Fantastic. You see useful stuff. You even get free tips. Rich's Scottish predecessors are all turning in their graves, listening to how he powders his nose each morning, says Carl.
I know. Yeah, they absolutely are. They absolutely are. They also, like, I don't drink either. So they disowned me ages ago.
Oh, my God.
For, like, the last 20 years, my dad just pretended I'm drunk. All right, you're Richard. Of course he drinks, right? He's having a wee dram now. That's no water, right? That's not water. That's whiskey.
You've got to make sure
listen, bro, before I make this worse for my Scottish ancestors, like, I need to tell you, I'm also, because it's very important that I mention this on every single thing or else I lose my membership card. I'm also a vegan.
Oh Lord. Jesus.
You are not even.
No haggis for you.
You're not even like 5% Scottish anymore. No wonder Leanne picked up on your accent going away. The Scots.
That's what happened. I moved to South Africa.
Yeah.
I moved. You know what happened?
Turned into a soy boy.
Excuse me for this. Yeah. Yes. And I blame that fucking Al Gore. Okay.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Al Gore.
Yeah.
Fuck you. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Because Al Gore did it. He did the only presentation in the history of the world to win an Oscar. It was called An Inconvenient Truth.
I remember.
Brilliant documentary and actually a masterclass in presenting. And because one of my favorite things, and I said to you at the end, you know, that four steps, the last one, tell them what they need to do.
Yes.
You just watched this big thing about the world going to hell in a handbasket and like the environment is screwed and you can't do anything. And then at the end of it, he turns around and says, but you must be thinking, what can you do? And I was. And you're thinking, next time you go to the shops, just buy an energy-saving light bulb. That's it. That's the only change I want you to make.
Mm.
But he's smart AF because you go to the shop, you buy an energy-saving light bulb, and the instant you do that, you're telling yourself, hey, I'm a person who cares about this kind of thing. So you change your light bulb, then you change all your light bulbs. And every time you do that, you're further down to the fact that you're writing a story and selling yourself a story that you're a person who cares about this. Then you recycle, then you do this, then you're a bloody vegan. I mean, for God's sake.
I love your story. You're a great...
I still think
my
vegan food made by my wife is more delicious than anything you guys have eaten in the last month.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Listen, you talk about the power of storytelling, and you're really good at this, but I didn't buy any of Al Gore's bullshit. I haven't fallen for one part of it. I don't care about energy-saving light bulbs. I don't separate my rubbish. I don't eat vegan food. So not a single bit...
You don't separate your rubbish.
Not a single bit of his propaganda bullshit has got through to me. So I don't know whether that means I'm bad or he's not good.
No, I think it probably means you're smart in some ways. Listen, the energy-saving light bulb, but just don't be an asshole. It's not nothing. Even if you don't like the environment, buying one light bulb that lasts you for 20 years is a lot cheaper than buying 20 light bulbs. And you don't need those white ones anymore. They've got nice yellow colors.
There are people who have 6 or 7 children in this world, and they have the cheek to tell me I must get an energy-saving light bulb. Please. You want to talk about environmental terrorism?
No. I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to you about environment. I'm saying to you at some point, this is one of my problems with a lot of people's argument, is if there is no falsifiability of your point of view. So even just from a purely economically logical standpoint, buying an energy-saving light bulb, if you're not buying an energy-saving light bulb, if you're buying cheap, crappy
light
bulbs
that
you have to replace every few years.
Yeah,
so that's not a logical thing. You may as well buy the energy-saving bulb. But what again, so and this is what happens. It does creep in. And then as for the, I think we all know that the recycling thing, we now know the data that this actually isn't making the impact that it said that it says. Right. It's like we're, there's a little bit of a long con there. Mm-hmm. And the final thing for me is the vegan thing has got nothing to do. The environment is a nice side effect for me. Mm-hmm. But the vegan thing is simply because I now live in a world where things don't have to die for me to eat delicious food. So that's not necessary anymore. But that's not to say anyway. Like I'm indifferent to you doing it.
Yeah. Well, I still think your ancestors would be deeply disappointed in you. That's all.
Oh, totally, totally. In fact, a little part of me is doing it just to piss them off. Walk all over them, okay? They let the English do terrible things to them. This is my revenge to them. Your great grandson will be a teetotaling vegan.
It's your ancestors are the ones who are fucking with your accent, actually. Yeah.
So we're gonna wrap this up in a second, but I just want to tell you a quick Scottish story from Billy Connolly that's in my mind. As he always says, it's tattooed on the inside of my skull. And he tells this brilliant story, and he says at the beginning, he goes, oh God, I hope it's true. He says, my sister is a supply teacher in Glasgow. And she makes herself available when the other teachers are sick or whatever. And he says, and she took the bus. And when she got on the bus, there was a wee man, a dwarf, on the bus. And a woman got up and said to the dwarf, do you want to have my seat? I'm getting off the bus. And the dwarf flew into a rage and said, oh, it's because I'm a dwarf. You don't respect me because you think you feel sorry for me. It's pity. I won't take your seat and I don't care about you and don't be rude. All of this stuff. And I'm not going to keep up the Billy Connolly accent the whole way through. Anyway, he says, the bus trundled down the road. Everyone was fairly embarrassed and they kept quiet. And at the next stop, a large Glaswegian woman got off. And she was walking down the aisle and she turned to the wee dwarf person and she said to him, I have just left my seat and I would very much appreciate if you'd take it because I see you're struggling to reach the straps to hold on and you're being bounced around the bus. And he flew into his rage again and said, oh, it's because I'm a dwarf. And she went, no, it's because you are a person. And as a human being, I respect you enough to offer you my seat. And by the way, she says, I thought you were very rude to that other woman just now. And I'd like Snow White to punish you when you get home. Anyway, have a happy day. Thank you, Rich.
I'm listening to his biography. Oh, he's great. At the moment.
Isn't he great?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Shame. Apparently, he's very sick.
Awesome.
Apparently, he's not well, old Billy Connolly.
My one wee bit of advice for anybody who does like Billy Connolly and is considering buying the book for a nice Christmas read, it's excellent. Normally, I would say to you with an autobiography, get the book listened to, read by the author. Mm-hmm. In this case, read it yourself. You'll remember young Billy Connolly and you'll read with vibrance. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you're hearing a slightly different version of him and it actually becomes quite sad to listen to in the delivery. So that's a small little sobering note to leave you on. But thank you so much, everybody, for having me. It's been wonderful chatting to you today.
Good to see you too, Rich, and we'll chat to you soon. Good luck with the book. Here Be Dragons, Rich Mulholland. Very, very good to have him on the show this morning. Always try to bring you interesting people, and Rich is one of those people, without a doubt. Another interesting person who we like to have on the show is George Meany. Hello, George.
Ah, George.
Hello, Gareth Cliff. Hello, Trian. Molelo.
Okay, very good. You two and that joke is going to get so tired so quickly. But anyway, I've just got to quickly, before you tell us about what's going on in the Auto Trader pod, George Meany's here for that. Let me quickly tell you that no business is too small to be hacked. And this week, I'm recommending a podcast for you to listen to from our friend Jaco Voigt, Catalytic. It's called Unbundled. And the latest episode of Unbundled is all about AI's role in cybersecurity. Now, you may remember we touched on some of this about a week ago with one of our guests. But social engineering, phishing, vulnerability scams, penetration testing, multi-factor authentication. You need to know about this stuff. Because if those words don't mean anything to you, you're really not paying attention. And it's time to listen to this podcast. And there are so many layers to the approach. for firewalls, antiviruses. You got to protect your business. You've also got to protect yourself. And Yaku and his guest unpack all of this for you on this week's episode of Unbundled. So do it now. Go and download it. Subscribe to that one on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or whatever you listen to your podcasts on, because you need to know this stuff. Go and take a look at it. That's Yaku Voigt, Catalytic, and Unbundled on cliffcentral.com. All right. So, George, what do you got for us this morning?
Well, first thing, Gareth, is you can you've heard of the website Alibaba.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is kind of like the a similar version to Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. You can order yourself a two-thirds sized electric Bucky.
Oh, yeah?
It's like the Ford F-150, and they're calling it the F-50, and it's from China, for 34,000 rand. Now, if you import anything from anywhere, just make sure the thing is legal to drive on our roads, because you can't import something, drive it on our roads if the government...
And don't forget that there are import duties and all kinds of things, too, that they're going to charge you when it gets here. But do you want to see what this thing looks like, Bulelo and Leanne? You want to see what it looks like, this little... 30 grand
mini.
What did you call it? A mini truck, mini Bucky.
Well, yeah, it's a mini Bucky because it's two-thirds size, and it looks like a bit of a Breton.
A half loaf.
Here it is. Take a look. There it is. That's the little car. It's got tiny little wheels.
Oh, wow.
Are those lawnmower wheels, or are those regular size?
I think they may be a little bit bigger than lawnmower wheels, to be honest, but you can import this thing, and import duties probably double the price of any car that you look at overseas. So at 30,000 rand, 34,000 rand, as a matter of fact, you're probably going to pay another 35,000 rand import duty if you do import this thing. So 70,000 rand for a little, two-thirds size toy, not bad if you can get it.
Gareth, there's a sound that you make that if this car had a sound, it would be that.
What? What's the sound?
That like me. I don't know. You do like this weird sound.
That of like
a small car.
A stutut. One of those. Like a little.
But there's a sound that you make where you go me or something.
Oh, I know what you mean. Hang on, I know exactly the sound that you're talking about. This kind of.
No, not that one. You do it with your voice.
No, man. It's this stututu sound. You know the kind of. That thing. Is that not it?
No, you do it with your voice. You go, me. I don't know what it is.
Me. That kind of thing. All right.
Yes.
All right. Does that make you happy, Leanne? Completely derailed George's whole point in order to make me make a stupid sound. But George, surely, if these kinds of cars were available, it's not everybody's cup of tea, and you're not buying this to be cool. It might be a utility vehicle. You've got a small business that you need to run. You need to do deliveries, or you need to have space in the back for materials or whatever. It makes sense to be able to get something like this for 30,000 rand. But, it's so typical of our government and the bureaucracy of South Africa that you then have to pay more than the cost price in duties to bring the stupid thing in. It's that they're immediately doubling your costs where they don't need to, just because they're greedy for tax money. Unbelievable.
Well, this is the whole argument around, one of the reasons electric vehicles in South Africa are going to take longer than it should take.
Yep.
And we might just lose some of our economy because the taxes are just so high. I mean, out of the starting gates, internal combustion engine vehicle is, there's 18% import duty on the ICE vehicle. Mm-hmm. That's the base import tax. Before you start adding ad valorem tax and all other taxes, which kind of take it up to close to almost double the price of the car. Electric vehicles start at 25% import tax.
Yeah.
So there's already a 7% or, 6% difference, between an ICE vehicle and an electric vehicle. And, it just makes it difficult.
Yeah. I find it all very annoying because really, if you want to kickstart an economy and ours needs all the help it can get, these kinds of vehicles could be very helpful to small business owners and frankly to people who, who have the need for a utility vehicle but can't afford some big SUV or Bucky or truck. And it could bridge such a nice gap if the government just took a little bit less of a duty on that. And if we could just make importing and exporting a little less cumbersome. I mean, my God, even when I buy books and things overseas, And you go onto Alibaba, you go onto Amazon, as you mentioned, you want to order something. It makes it so difficult. Our post office is useless, so it always takes much longer than it should. And even if you bring it in by courier, the duties are crazy. The customs duties are just insane. So come on, if anyone from government is listening, if anyone from Treasury is listening, and we have listeners in all kinds of places, then just talk to someone and try to help kickstart the economy by removing some of these obstacles, please. So it's a polite request from me and Mbulelo and Leanne and George this morning.
Exactly. I mean, there's a reason why Buckies and panel vans are so popular in South Africa.
Yes.
Such high demand, you know?
Yeah,
help a person out.
Help a brother out. Exactly. Next story is not, this is a little bit of a depressing one, but there's a couple of points I want to make, Gareth, and that is, what is the change in the petrol price over the last decade? Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a look at 2011 versus 2021, the petrol price has pretty much doubled in the last decade. But that's not the most important thing. It's gone up 60% in the last 5 years and 40% in the last year alone. So that doubling has taken place literally in the last 6 months to maybe 2 or 3 years. So it hasn't gone up evenly. There's actually this U-curve where it's exponentially getting more expensive for fuel.
Oh, you see, George, you can explain this better than I did the other day, but a lot of this is there's the basic fuel price, which has gone up, you know, the cost of oil. Then there are all these levies and the road accident fund levy and then the petrol levy, and all of those make up almost half the price of a liter of petrol now.
Exactly. So just under 9 Rand is what the actual fuel price is, the basic fuel price, and just under 10 Rand. And that's gone up from 6.29 Rand a decade ago. The other taxes have almost, for instance, the petrol levy has doubled to 2.5, you know, touching on 3 times.
Well,
where's the actual
basic getting all this money?
The government are trying to kind of fleece you and make it work for them, but not for you. I'm afraid. I mean, Outa published this really useful chart, which I'm going to try and put on in a minute, just to show you how they break down the petrol price and what exactly you're paying for. And again, George, you know, for many people, they're traveling a lot less at the moment because lockdowns and the change in working environments has had an impact on people. But for those who are delivering goods, and we all have to pay for that price increase because we all go to the shops and we all buy things and it still needs to be delivered to you. So who ends up paying? You. You end up paying. That's who it is. Correct. Let me just show you this Outa graphic because this will help you. There's a useful article that I found on this. And I'm glad George is here to at least add some credibility, because when I spoke about it the other day, I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. But here you can see the current petrol price is that tower on the right. And 9.37 Rand is the actual basic fuel price. Then there's a 4.09 Rand other levy category, which is insane. It's the biggest levy category. Then there's the road accident fund, which costs you 2.18 Rand for every liter of petrol you fill up. Then the petrol levy itself, which is another 3.83 Rand. And all the levies combined have increased by 126%, whereas the fuel price in 10 years has only increased by 49%.
Yeah, it's totally out of whack.
Out of whack.
It's ridiculous. Exactly. It's ridiculous.
Totally out of whack. And if you look at the little table at the bottom there, Gareth, you'll see that the price of oil has actually come down by 23%.
Yeah,
that's right. Input cost has come down. I mean, yes, the rand dollar, the rand has tanked, but that's because of a bad economy. But the actual input cost has come down.
Well, you see, George, I'm glad that you could explain it all to us. Thank you. We need to know this stuff.
So how do you save fuel on your December trip?
I'm a bicycle.
Yeah, no, bicycle. You know, it's very difficult to save fuel while driving, you know, in today's world, because cars are very efficient. You know, cars are very efficient compared to cars 10, 20, 30 years ago. So it's very difficult to save fuel, but what you can do is do a couple of really kind of what I'd say is intuitive things, things that should be common sense. When you accelerate from a traffic light, or when you get going in traffic, or you're on your way to Durban and the traffic comes to a standstill, don't race to 120 kilometers an hour. Ease yourself to 120 kilometers an hour, because the number of times that you do that will just save you fuel. When you brake, anticipate the braking, slow down evenly, don't jam on the brakes, because you've just wasted a lot of fuel by doing that. And so your driving style can save you a bit of money on your long trip.
Very good. That's useful information too. Cool. All right. So don't race away from the stop street like an idiot.
Yes, don't race away on the stop street like you know they do in Durban. Very finally, why is it a bad idea to let your dog stick their head out of your car window?
Well, because...
And I'll tell you why. Besides... Go on.
No, your dog's head sticking out of the window means your dog's head could be chopped off if something comes up close to the window, for God's sake.
A passing bus.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's dangerous for the dog. Insects, debris flying into their eyes, etc. But everybody knows that a dog's hearing is a lot more sensitive than a human's hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Wind rushing past the dog's poor ears at 100 k's an hour, can you imagine what that's doing to the dog's hearing? And if your dog goes deaf after a while, it might be because they're sticking their head out of your car window.
Okay, it explains why my little miniature pincher went deaf early. But how do you stop him from doing that besides keeping the window up, which feels cruel?
It does feel cruel, but I thought it was a nice anecdote saving your dog's hearing.
There we go. That's useful.
Some humans' hearing need to be saved too. But
this is something that people don't appreciate fully about Leanne and George, is how much they care about animals too. It's not all about cars and saving petrol money, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, yes.
Yeah. All right, very good. The government is not pushing EV cars because they will not get levies from them like they do from the petrol levies. That's a point that Jeremy's making this morning. Mm. Annette says the pet thing, that's also bad for their eyes. A dog can put his head outside a window, no problem, but blow on their face and they hate it. You noticed that. Says Nico. That's so a good true. Point too. All right, anything else, George?
Nope, that's it. And vehicle market in South Africa, very finally, is starting to gain a little bit of momentum. And it's encouraging, but it's early days. Hopefully 2022 is a different place.
Well, your timing is excellent. It's exactly 8 o'clock. Have an awesome Friday, everybody, an awesome weekend as well. And we will see you on Monday. Be good. Cheers. CliffCentral.com.